Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Natto. Saturdays at the Spa is brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Good morning and welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on Alabama Day here at Saratoga. And a week early, but we had Travers last week in this weird and wild 2020 that we're in. So Alabama a week early, but another kind of weird thing. It's a prep for the Kentucky Oaks. So Anthony Mormino and I were just on the Handicappers Report. A really great day here at Saratoga. It's unfortunate you can't get up here, but there is a lot going on in town, a lot of race watch parties and things like that. So come on up to Saratoga. It's still fun to be a part of the town and watch races. Like I said, there's plenty of places you can go to see what is a tremendous 11 race card. The Saratoga Derby precedes the Alabama, and shortly I'll have a little segment that Gary Contessa taped for us regarding Christoph Clément, who's going to start two today, Decorated Invader and Go Fu, in the Saratoga Derby. And Decorated Invader, our friends from West Point Thoroughbreds, I mentioned on the Handicappers Report as well. Seth Nell did a great job yesterday talking to Terry Finley about not only Decorated Invader and the West Point roster, but the racing in general in 2020, in the landscape that everybody's kind of navigating through in this pandemic that we're, has all encompassed everything, and how racing is could thrive, or we hope will thrive out of that. So check that out online or the YouTube channel, the OTB channel. A really good interview. And, Terry gave a lot of insight as well into the Saratoga Derby. So it was pretty cool. But Christoph, in the piece that Gary Contessa taped, is kind of going to talk about life and getting to this point, and family, and meets leading trainer up to now. So he's having a heck of a summer, and very logical to add to that tally today. And then around 10:45 or so, Jonathan Kinchin is going to come in and wrap it up with me today. He's going to talk turf racing. Jonathan's got a lot of going on. Of course, you see him with Fox in the afternoon and all of that, and one of the sharpest handicappers we have out there. And he's going to talk Saratoga Derby as well, but he's very, very insightful in turf racing. I've spent a lot of time with Jonathan. He's got a lot of maybe outside the box angles and things like that maybe we don't always think about when handicapping. But my first guest here on Saturdays at the Spa, and he joins me for the third year in a row, and I'm pleased to bring in Kenny McPeak, who is front and center in today's Alabama. Kenny, thank you so much for joining us. Swiss Skydiver, the heavy favorite today, but En Votante as well, who looks kind of like a live long shot, two in the Alabama. You haven't been as prevalent up here this summer at Saratoga, but all systems go today, I would think.
Yeah, you were excited to be here, even if it's in a lesser degree than years previous. Unfortunately, logistically, it was really difficult to bring a big team of people, and so we brought what I'd call a short string, and it's a good short string. We started off good with a nice win early in the meet, and that filly run back late in the meet, and of course, today's a huge day.
Yeah, I guess in this era that we're living in, and you're training horses in, how many did you bring up? I know Ian Wilkes, we were kind of looking at him on paper, and he brought a small select group, and they were all kind of firing. So is it safe to say the Kentucky guys that are here, the horses that are here, are supposed to run?
Well, everything we've dealt with all year long, it's really the harder part's the people, not the horses. Mm-hmm. But getting everybody moving, and whether they've got COVID tests, and making sure everybody's got a safe place to stay. And I think Ian had a short string up in New York earlier in the spring. So logistically, it was a little bit easier. He's a good friend, by the way. He's a really great guy, great horseman, obviously. But in our case, we kept dilly-dallying. We waited and we waited. Mm-hmm. I was going to send 24 the first week in July, and it didn't happen. Then I was going to send maybe a dozen second week in July, and ended up we didn't hit town until about the I want to say 26th to 27th okay. of July with six or seven horses. But it's kind of been a semi-vacation for us. You know, I can do six or seven horses blindfolded, and we spend a lot of time out on the lake in the afternoons. And my assistant, Britt, has done a good job here and freed me up a little bit. And we worry about the horses in the morning, and we enjoy ourselves later.
I mean, you could be doing worse than spending, you said you've been here for about 3 weeks in Saratoga.
Yeah, well, I had rented a house for the season, and of course, then I didn't get a chance to use it as much, but it is what it is, and like I said, today's a big day. Hopefully that pays for the whole summer.
I had Jack Knowlton on last week, you know, co-owner of Tis the Law, and I asked him because, you know, we're going to talk about Swiss Skydiver and Envo Tante in a second, but, you know, I asked him, as a guy with a very high-profile three-year-old, that, you know, you were kind of in limbo. You didn't really necessarily know if there was going to be a Kentucky Oaks, how it was going to all shape out. In regards to Swiss Skydiver, who's certainly front and center for the Kentucky Oaks, did you have to kind of back off with her a little bit, not knowing if there was going to be an Oaks? And how do you train? What do you do? What race am I prepping in? How did you go about it with her?
It's been the most unusual year because most audibles have been called at the line of scrimmage because you didn't know what race. At one point after the fantasy, there were no races on the schedule.
Right.
Santa Anita Oaks hadn't been scheduled. Kentucky Oaks, they were still unsure about. We actually talked about maybe even flying her over to Europe for a race. It, you know, it has been crazy season. But, you know, good horses make all of it up.
Sure.
She, you know, so sturdy and steady. But when they're doing good, you run. And even this week, I had originally said I was going to skip the race.
Yeah.
But she's trained. She trains like a beast. Mm-hmm. She acts like she wants to do something. And Alabama's such a great race. Why skip it? And you know, who's to say? They might not even have a Kentucky Oaks Derby.
You don't.
I mean, like, things in this day and age, things are moving pretty quick.
We're going to bring up first video here of the fantasy. And I read a couple quotes from you in the fantasy at Oakland. We're going to pick it up on the backstretch. And this was, you know, her second race when she really started getting on a roll. You see her on the outside here in the red and blue silks. Really got ripping pretty good. I know you mentioned two turns. Is that really what kind of started her out to get her where she's kind of turned into today?
Well, we were kind of unlucky trying to get her to two turns, and once we have, we've been able to get into a nice routine with her. She's obviously fast. She had a history of kind of getting off slow early in her races in her first two or three starts, and I tend to like young horses to rate off the pace in their first few races because I think they learn how to navigate through a field,
And
whether they can take dirt in their face and they can go inside or outside.
Right.
I think that helps them in the long run. And she's a filly, but she showed too little early speed.
Mm-hmm.
So we did some extra gate work with her going into the Gulfstream Park Oaks, and it's made a big difference. But I do still think she's very rateable.
Right.
I think today, I'm really thinking she needs to go the first half mile in 48.
Okay.
Not 46 and change like she did at Keeneland.
Yeah, we'll bring up footage of the Santa Anita Oaks. And I said to Anthony Mormino on the Handicappers Report, looking at her on paper, you've seen all the races, but you look at the splits, I didn't realize, and here she is rolling off the far turn in the Santa Anita Oaks in front, how fast she is on paper, her splits and things like that. Very, very fast filly.
Yeah, this was definitely one of her more impressive races because Mike asked her, because she was on the inside, and he asked her away from there into the first turn to get position, and she knocks out 46 and change, 10 and change, and keeps on going. But today, this race is trickier, and having participated in it with Eskimo
Kisses,
if you go too fast too early, you'll melt down late. So you have to be careful, and those are the kind of things we're going to be talking about with the jocks before the race.
Right.
Is, you know, be patient here. It's the long way around there, and if you get too anxious early, you won't finish.
And the filly that she blasted that day in the Santa Anita Oaks, Speech, is a very nice filly. Came back to win the Ashland.
Yep.
The company she's kept has been very heady. Beat Venetian Harbor three back in the fantasy. So, you know. She's faced everybody that's out there with the exception of Gamine, but these are nice fillies that she's beating handily, and that clearly, I would think, had you thinking very big. You run in the bluegrass against colts. We'll bring that up on the backstretch, and you took a big shot that day, and Well, she ran her race. There's no doubt about that. Art Collector, you know, is second, third, maybe first on some people's list. Here she is inside with the White Shadow role. Gave Art Collector everything he wanted and more, and really bottomed out the rest of the field. How proud of her and impressed were you with this, you know, really stepping up?
Well, Ricky Bobby, yeah, he being second. You know, 23-1, 46-3 kind of softened her up for him. That's a really good horse that Brian rode. And, you know, Brian had the opportunity to ride either my filly or him. So he made, obviously, the right call. But, you know, she beat the rest of them pretty handily. And it's a I thought historically it'd be kind of fun to win.
Would have been the first filly ever.
Yeah, and it would have been my third. I was kind of, like, wanting to check that box again. I always like winning the bluegrass. But it also gave En Vuitton a chance to at least get some black type in her race. And Avatar's a nice filly in her own right. And I don't know, any other year I probably would have stuck to the Ashland.
Okay.
But we'll, worked out all right.
We're going to talk about her in a second. We'll show that Churchill race in a second, too. But you mentioned the jockeys. You're going to have a conversation with them. I know Tyler's ridden Swiss Skydiver before, and he'll get on today with Mike Smith not being here. You know, he's ridden her before, but he hasn't ridden her in a while since her first two starts. Is it a concern? I think Tyler has definitely flexed his muscles at Churchill and Keeneland. I mean, he's showing that he's on the precipice of being if he's not there already, as good as anybody there is. And he's really come up here and ridden well in a very, very tough colony. Him getting back aboard Swiss Skydiver today, you said you'll have a conversation with him, but is she a filly that, is she quirky at all or very easy to ride?
Well, as you've seen, everybody's ridden her, and just about everybody's won on her. So no, she's not quirky at all. I do think, and he and I have already talked about it, that in the bluegrass, we probably went a little quick.
Okay.
And he doesn't have to do that from the outside draw.
Right.
You know, the five hole's a lot more convenient for us, I think. I think the trickier one, En Vuitton, has a trickier job on the inside. But Jose knows her pretty well, too. But, you know, these guys are top-notch.
Sure.
I've got no concerns whatsoever about the job that Tyler or Jose will do.
You've won this race in the past. You Eskimo Kisses. You were here 3 years ago, or when she won. You know what it takes to win. You know how to get a filly to go. What can be a very demanding, as you alluded to, a mile and a quarter. You said you want to see 48, not 46 today. Do you have any reservations about the distance?
No, not really. I think on talent-wise, I mean, Eskimo Kisses, obviously, you know, she's been there, done that here. But this filly's probably more talented.
Sure.
So, you know, what kind of field? Anytime you're running against, you know, Baffert, Pletcher, Brad Cox, I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out, but those guys, they come to these races to win these races. And that's what's great about it is it's a very competitive sport, and you can't assume anything. They do call it the graveyard of favorites for a reason, and we're not assuming anything today. We've got our work cut out for us, but maybe they do too.
Right. Well, I don't think there's any question about that. Before we switch gears to En Vuitante, I mean, I have to ask you this question. You got points to run in the Derby. Is it still in your mind, or is this now all full steam ahead to the Oaks?
Okay, so going into the Bluegrass, we were pretty sure that was the one horse we had to beat, was Art Collector. And I thought if we could beat Art Collector, then, you know, maybe she checks that box and you could consider running in the Derby. Her sheet numbers said that she would be competitive in it.
Yep.
But in the long run, okay, if you think about the calendar, and it's been changing all summer, race dates have been changing. After the Kentucky Oaks, there really isn't a top filly race anywhere.
Cotillion was canceled, and
exactly. Yeah. So the Preakness is still on the calendar, and so, you know, we all dream. Let's say she won today, and she came back and she won the Oaks. Where do you run her after that?
Right.
You've got 2 months until the Breeders' Cup. Still, now she's got points for the Preakness. So,
and
can she check those boxes?
Right.
Like I said, we get in it to dream. Wouldn't it be awesome? But we still got Gamine to meet, and I think she's ducking us, by the way.
Well, let me ask you that, because I had Bob Baffert on last week via Zoom, and, you know, he talked about Gamine, and obviously that was before the race, and you've seen her. Now, she hasn't run like that going two turns. I know she won at Oaklawn. You know, let's get past the Alabama, but, you know, we're fans as much as we are horse handicappers and things like that, and that is a – pretty salty matchup that going to demanding 9 furlongs at Churchill Downs, where I would think you would be a lot more comfortable facing Gamine at 9 at Churchill than, let's say, 7 here in the test or a mile in the Acorn at Belmont.
Well, teaching young horses to go 2 turns isn't, it's not all that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so she's coming off a 7 furlong sprint and a really impressive flat mile prior to that.
Right.
But going 2 turns is a different deal. And fillies, colts, they can get confused.
Yeah.
So I think my fillies pretty much stated her, you know, her pattern.
Yep.
We know what to expect. Gamine's going to have to go out there and do something she hadn't done before.
Yeah.
Would that give us an advantage? I don't know. Let's get through today.
Sure.
Let's hopefully we can, you know, we have this problem.
Absolutely. That'd be a good problem to have, right?
Exactly.
Before I let you go, though, you know, to me, as a handicapper, and we did the handicapper support, Anthony and I, before, to me, Envoltante, and we're going to bring up the race at Churchill. This is 2 back at Churchill. When she looked really good coming on late. She's going to come from the back a little bit and comes on late. I thought this was a very, very impressive wide run. You're seeing her swoop a little bit here. To me, at least, you look on paper, she looks like a mile and a quarter filly. To me, that could be maybe in a good spot here today to get a big piece.
We've been planning towards this race for a long time with her. I've always felt like the Alabama was going to be a race that she would thrive in. Even back in the winter, we talked about it. She does need to find another gear,
yep,
speed-wise. And her and Swiss Skydiver have been regular workmates.
Okay.
And there's a lot of talent with this filly as well. Timing-wise on her ride, I think it's another – we need fractions,
sure,
to be kind to her early. The one hole's a little tricky for Jose because we've already talked about she doesn't necessarily like to be pinned down inside.
Mm-hmm.
If there isn't any pace, though, he might find himself up front anyway.
Right.
I don't even know. You know, so that this whole thing, how it unfolds, is going to be quite interesting. The first half mile, I'll be spotting, you know, what are those reactions,
yeah,
to see where my fillies are sitting.
Right.
But Jose's got the tougher task, and maybe not with the most talented filly, but he knows her, and he'll give her every shot.
And I thought, you know, you mentioned she got some key black type running third in the Ashland. I thought, you know, going a short finish line, mile and a 16th against 2 really nice fillies. I thought she ran, you know, very big in a race that I would think you would agree, race flow-wise, and that was really against her, too.
Well, like I said, that racetrack that day, I think, was playing extremely fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think she wants a little slower, heavier racetrack, and she's going to get that here.
Well, she's going to get that here.
Here, we always think we always feel it's a little bit deeper and a different surface than we deal with in Kentucky. And Keeneland in July, that track, that surface was lightning fast. So, you know, it's another setup, and she once again needs 2 turns. And, look, I hope they both run good.
Absolutely. Alabama, the feature race of the day, one of the pillars of the 3-year-old filly races, and it's historic. You've won it before. Before I let you go, anybody we should look forward to up here, any 2-year-olds or anything? I know you won one on the turf a couple weeks ago. Anything else that you're looking forward to running or what's left in the meet?
I've got an American Pharaoh filly named Mrs. O'Connell. It's going to run probably sometime in early September, and Simply Ravishing is,
mm-hmm,
a filly that won opening or the first week we were here. That's a really, really good filly. You know, she's a New York bred. She's by Loban, or I'm not sure.
Loban, yep.
Yeah. And she's a pretty nice filly in her own right. We're pretty excited. I'm dreaming that next year she'll have us in the Alabama,
okay,
again. That's for Harold Lerner, one of my favorite people,
sure,
to work for. And there's a few other ones in there. I've got some horses we've entered in some starter 50s.
Yep.
The race didn't go. And I may ship some other young horses up from Kentucky as we get closer towards the end of the meet, now that we've got a little bit of base.
Right, right. And I think she was 14-1 that day. And I remember saying, you know, Kenny doesn't have a lot of horses here. If she's here, she's got to be all right. And,
yeah.
She was.
She worked this morning at the Oklahoma track and did 48 and change like,
okay,
breaking sticks. And you know what? She's big, beautiful filly. Take a look at her when you see her out again.
Would P.G. Johnson, is that, do they still
run
that?
P.G. Johnson,
that, okay,
yeah. Saez will ride her back.
Okay.
And she's all pretty well set for that.
All right. Well, Kenny McPeak's pretty well set today, at least going in with Swiss Skydiver and then kind of a nice entry mate, so to speak, with Envoltante. But all things focus on Swiss Skydiver in the Alabama. Kenny, thanks again for taking the time. Like I've said to everybody that sat in that chair, to get here and take the time to be live and in front. I really appreciate it. I know what it's like on a grade one Saturday morning at Saratoga, so for you to stop by means a lot. I appreciate
it. I'd be worried more if you weren't calling.
That is a good point. I mean, you know, it's not the worst thing to want to be on TV on a grade one Saturday at Saratoga. Kenny McPhee, thanks again. Swiss skydiver en votante in the grade one Alabama later this afternoon at Saratoga. It's going to bring us to our first break here on Saturdays at the Spa. When we come back, we're going to air a piece of Gary Contessa tape with Christoph Komapa. Going into the break, Christoph trains both Decorated Invader and GoFu. Going into the break, we're going to show the entire Hall of Fame, Decorated Invader, winning that strong morning line favorite today in the Saratoga Derby for our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds. So check that out. When we come back, I'll get us into Gary Contessa with Christoph Komapa. Stay tuned.
Dangerous and Decorated Invader. There in the gate. And they're off in the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame Stakes. And Get Smokin' is out for the early lead. Get Smokin' racing in the middle of the course here as they come by the stands. And Get Smokin' has opened up three lengths on the big favorite, Decorated Invader, who's running in second. And then it's Moon Over Miami next in third, followed by Ever Dangerous in fourth. And the early trailer will be Domestic Spending. Get Smokin' opens up on the field here, in front by seven as they go into that clubhouse turn. It is Get Smokin', ran the opening quarter mile in 23 4/5 seconds. Decorated Invader sitting in second. It's 2.5 lengths back to Moon Over Miami, then Ever Dangerous and Domestic Spending. They're on the backstretch now with Get Smokin', the leader here by more than a half dozen lengths. Decorated Invader remains in second. Now it's 4 lengths back to Moon Over Miami, then Ever Dangerous and Domestic Spending remains at the back. Half mile, 48 4/5 seconds. Get Smokin' holding on to the lead here, and the lead is 8 lengths as they approach the far turn. Decorated Invader has been second the entire way. They're going around the far turn. It's Get Smokin' in front. The lead is down to 4 lengths. Decorated Invader getting closer in second. Get Smokin'. The lead is now 2.5 lengths. With Decorated Invader in second, then Ever Dangerous, Moon Over Miami, and Domestic Spending, and the field is in the stretch. It is Get Smokin' on the inside, and Decorated Invader on the outside. From the back of the pack, it's Domestic Spending, who is putting in a late run here. It's Get Smokin', Decorated Invader, and then Domestic Spending. Decorated Invader has taken the lead in deep stretch, and he's 3 for 3 as a 3-year-old. Decorated Invader the winner. It was close for second between the pace setter Get Smokin' and Domestic Spending.
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you here on Alabama Day. Just a glorious day here in Saratoga Springs. And, you know, one of the centerpieces of the meet, the Grade 1 Alabama for the 3-year-old fillies, a mile and a quarter, which is certainly can be the separator. And special thanks to Kenny McPeak, who just joined me. He's trained Swiss skydiver, the heavy favorite, as well as Invocante down inside. And, you know, you could hear a little, you know, a little bit of trepidation in Kenny's voice. It's a mile and a quarter. It's an unknown trip for all these gals, and they don't necessarily get it. And he's got a very speedy filly who's going to be a short price favorite doing something that she hasn't done before. So, you know, sometimes that levels the playing field a little bit, but there's no doubt that Swiss skydiver, Dave Aragona's got her even money on the morning line. I think that's dead on, because she is that type of filly in this race, especially that isn't brimming with a lot of, at least up to this point, not a lot of viable contenders to her throne. I know Gamine is, you know, everybody thinks she's the best three-year-old filly, and she might well be. She's the most brilliant one. There's no doubt about that. But as Kenny said, you know, he's got a two-turn filly that has shown her stuff time and again going two turns, and Gamine has been much, much more brilliant going one turn in the Acorn, and then we saw it last Saturday in the test, which was just awesome again. So as handicappers, as fans, we like to look forward, and that would be a great matchup in the Kentucky Oaks, Swiss Skydiver and Gamine meeting right in the middle, going 9 furlongs to Churchill Downs, but we'll get the Alabama out of the way today first. And as we went into break, I mentioned Gary Contessa. We're going to show it in a second. Talked a great piece with Christophe Clement, and he's got the favorite, Decorated Invader, for our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds, and Terry Finley, the head boss at West Point, was on with Seth Merrill yesterday, so you can check that out as well. A very, very good interview, very candid interview. I thought Terry was great, just talking about the horses, talking about the game going forward. And Decorated Invader, no doubt, a strong favorite in the Saratoga Derby today, but, you know, there are some hurdles as well. It's a very tough field. I think nobody would argue it's his toughest field to date. Colonel Liam is in there, stablemate Go Foo for Christophe Clement is in there as well. Bama Breeze and Get Smoking on the lead. Mike Maker's got a couple of field pass, so it's a tough, tough spot. Chad and Seth Klarman with domestic spending. So a lot going on in the Saratoga Derby today. But as I mentioned, special thanks to Gary Contessa. We're going to show it now. Got a great piece with Christophe Clement talking about life, talking about horses, talking about family. And Christophe, the leading trainer so far here at the meet, which, you know, it's definitely a surprise because he's not a stable that, you know, typically throws out numbers like Chad or Todd does. So, Gary, we're going to show it now. Contessa earlier this week with Christophe Clement. So I hope you enjoy it. And then when we come back, we'll weave into Jonathan Kinchin. So, Gary Contessa, here with Christophe Clement. Enjoy.
This is Gary Contessa with Capital OTB. And this morning I have the privilege of interviewing trainer Christophe Clement, who is at the moment leading trainer at Saratoga. He's come out of the gate firing on all cylinders, and things are going quite well for the stable, and it's very, very good to see. He's always been a good friend, and I look forward to this interview. Christophe, you have such an interesting past, and you're born in France, and you have a racing family. Your father, Miguel, was a very good trainer. I believe you have a brother, Nick, who's also a trainer in France. Tell me about Christophe Clement coming up through high school, college, and always having that horse background. Tell me what life was like in France before you came to the United States.
I think it was a little bit easier for me than most people, just because of the fact that my father was a trainer. You know, two of my father's best friends were François Boutin, was a leading French trainer, and Alain Ked was also a leading French trainer. So they also helped me through all my youth. My father passed away when I was 12, but I was always, you know, still involved with the stable, mostly with the head family, Cricket Head and her father, Alec Head. But it's just been a bit easier for me because, you know, obviously I had the right contact and I grew up in racing. You know.
So you grew up in racing, and what was your first racetrack or yard experience? Like when you decided to leave school and get full-time into the racing industry in France, how did that come about?
Well, actually, you know, I grew up in Chantilly in a stable where my father trained, and my bedroom was like on top of a stall. So, I mean, I was always involved since basically I'm born in a stable, and I've been riding when I was a kid. I used to ride always a pony first and then race horses, and I used to ride one set for my dad before going to school. So I was always involved with the stable even before I left high school. You know, all my vacation were always to be at the races and to try to ride in the morning or to be at the races in the afternoon. And after I left high school, I actually spent 2 years in university, and it was great because it was in the afternoon, so I could also be involved with the training with the head family, mostly at the time Cricket Head, because she started on her own and I was spending quite a lot of time with her.
And did that lead to an apprenticeship or an assistant trainer position with any of those trainers?
No, so I spent a lot of time, probably spent three or four years to my high school and my university with Cricket Ed. And then in France, you had to do the military service at the time for 1 year, which I had to do. And when I left that, I went to TaylorMade Farm in Kentucky. I spent a summer with them, which I thought was pretty interesting. And that November, which I think was November 87, I got a job through the head family. They knew about Shug McGee, and Shug gave me a job starting on that November 87 to November 88, where I spent a year in an amazingly successful stable. This is the year, I think it was the second year that Shug McGee took the Phipps job. And I could be wrong, but I believe he was like the leading trainer at Gulfstream, he was the leading trainer at Belmont, he was the leading trainer in Saratoga. All that was a very reasonable amount of horses. It was just an amazing year with the Polish Navy, the personal flag, the personal ensign. So I was very lucky to spend 1 year. And I was young. I was, I don't know, 20 or 21. And I loved it. I was a hot walker. I was a groom. I spent some time on a pony. I mean, all type of things that when you are 20 years old, and if you like horses, you very much enjoy. And that was it for my year, basically, in the States. Then I went back in Europe, where I worked as an assistant trainer for somebody called Luca Comani in England. He was a brilliant trainer, also a brilliant man, very smart. Very much enjoy that. Enjoy 4 years in Newmarket, because when you're involved in Newmarket, you've got not only the racing, but you've got the breeding, you've got some of the leading bloodstock agents, leading farms, and of course some of the best horses in England being trained in Newmarket. So 4 years there was, you know, pretty interesting. And after the 4 years, I thought I was ready to train, 25 years old, which obviously wasn't, you know, as we get older in life, you learn that we always learn with horses, but I wanted to train. I could not train in England because you had to be, the cost of training in England was ridiculous because you had to buy a yard. You could not at the time share a stable. You had to have your own stable. So the choice was to either go back in France or to come to the States. My brother, who is older than me, already trained in France. Actually already won the ARC before I started training. So I thought that was a little bit overwhelming, and I was going to, and I was, you know, I had a big ego, and I thought France was too small for the two brothers. So I came back to the States. Choice was at the time either, you know, California or New York. And there was no doubt to me that New York was better because of my European connection and being closer to Europe. And thank God I made that choice because I've been very lucky and life is good. Yeah.
And lucky is an understatement. I know you've won over 1,800 races, and over 400 of those races are black type races. Your strike rate with black type horses is almost 20 to 25%, which is almost unheard of. You've won over 230 graded stakes in the United States, so I would say that choice was a good one.
No, absolutely, and you know, you're only as good as, you know, as a trainer, you're only as good as your owners and your horses, and of course your team. But I trained for great owners that probably I would have not been able to train for if I stayed in Europe. You know, in the first 10 years, most of my owners were European, and now I've got more American owners than European owners, which is great. But I mean, I've always trained for like great people. You know?
I see that. When you first came over from France, who would you credit as the owner that gave you your start? I mean, we all have somebody.
So my first year, you know, I started with 6 horses, and after a year, I had like 12 horses. But that 4 owners were amazing. I trained one very good filly for the Agacan. We won the stakes at Belmont Park in my first year. I trained a very good filly for a French owner called Paul de Moussac, called Passager du Soir, who beat the boys in my first winter in Florida in a grade 2. Because I probably at the time, I was not aware that you should not run a mare against the boys, but I did it. I trained 2 or 3 horses for Sheikh Mohammed, who supported me because I worked for a trainer who was involved with them in England. So, I mean, I had very, very good owners, you know.
Yes. And how about your first American owner? Who approached you first? Because I know when you come here, when you first come to this country, American owners want to see what you do first. So when they saw your winning ways, who was the first one to reach out to you?
Don't remember who was the first one, but among the first one altogether was 2 or 3 people that actually knew each other. Michael Silver, who had horses with my dad and sent me a horse to train. Charlie Harris, who also knew my dad and supported me with his wife Susan Harris. And Charlie Harris' friend called Peter Carchers, who also supported me when I first started training. So that was very influential to my career because it gave me access to onceuses and younger onceuses, yearlings, that I did not have before that.
And getting back to Shug McGahee for a moment, you came over, you spent a year internship. Imagine the year that you came to work for Shug is the year that he won the Eclipse Award, 1988, which must have been an unbelievable experience for you.
I mean, it was a lot of fun. So, you know, I was 20 years old, so it was absolutely great. You work at Gulfstream, just to see a palm tree would have get me excited, plus palm tree and the sea was great. You come to Saratoga, which was the most amazing place to be. I didn't sleep that much, but that's okay. And Shug was wonderful. Unfortunately, it took Shug probably 4 or 5 months to understand me with my accent. And it took me probably about 8 to 10 months to understand him with his accent. But except that, it was great.
That's great. Now, today, you mentioned something about your son. Tell us about your son.
So my son is more academic than I am, because both of my kids, you know, with their mother, probably are more academic than what I was. And my son has always liked racing. We've been pushing him away from racing all the time because we thought that maybe he ought to see something else than just the racetrack. But that didn't work, obviously, because he's back. He went to Duke, he worked for a bank, he went to Europe for 2 years, he traveled the world for another 2 years. But he came back, he's with me now. Great luxury as a father to work with your son, because not only it's a job, it's also as a family, it's always, on a human point of view, it's a wonderful thing if you can get on well enough to work together. And it's good for me too, because, you know, as he's worked in racing for like 4 or 5 years outside of the States, you know, he brings new things, and sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. But, you know, I'm a firm believer as a trainer, we always have to adapt. The guys who don't adapt usually are the guys who don't last. And so it's nice to have some youth around you, your son or some other assistants. It's nice to have new ideas to challenge you all the time.
And I like what I saw from him. He said, "Dad, you're sitting too close to Gary." I love that. I think I love to see the son looking out for the father. And I think that speaks a lot about what you've taught him and what kind of values you've taught him over the years, because he seems like a great guy. I've never spoken to him, but he's always there with you. He's always very polite. He's a real gentleman, and he's very much like you. I find him to be very much like you.
That's very kind of you, but it's fun. It's fun, and he's probably more, he's better than I am probably on certain things like ratings and numbers, and you know, the way he handicap races is probably more accurate than I am, which is good, you know, which I don't believe into successful trainers anymore as just being the one individual. I think it's a team to find the right horses, a team to find the right employees, a team to find the right jockeys, the right racers, the right owners. It's impossible for one individual to do all that well. It was, you know, when my dad was a trainer, he was on his own to make all these decisions. But in today's world, if you want to compete, you still have a few trainers who might be that way, but I don't think that will last for the next 20 years. I think you'll have to have a team of people in order to be successful.
I agree. And the support team for a trainer is so important. What's it like? How's your wife? Does she understand the game? You guys have that same bond or that same support system with your wife and your other children?
No, very much so. So my wife, you know, we met when we were very young, when we were 18 years old. So we met in university together. So my wife used to do a lot more to the stable than now, but I mean, she used to take care basically of my office and all the books and all the money side. She's still involved more, like to do some programs or to help me out. Whenever I need any help, you know, I will call her, which is great. But also I did not really help her for the kids' education. That was completely her department. And she's done very well in that department. But you need to have, it's a tough job, our job. So it's not easy on the wife or the girlfriend because of the way we live. I mean, you've got quite a lot of pressure. We've got up and downs, and it's difficult to keep a consistent family life. And I've been very lucky there.
Yeah, you know, having support of your wife is very important. I think in our business, I think the divorce rate on trainers is probably among the highest in the country. It's a tough business to get your family to understand, because it seems every time you make a plan, something goes wrong. You know, you're on call 24 hours a day with the horses. Somebody's always getting sick. Something's always going on. But your support staff is very strong and secure, and I think that's a real plus.
I agree, and on a private point of view, it just when you work with animals, it's 24 hours a day. It could be a farmer with his cattle, or us as a trainer. You know, things happen all the time, and you just have to adapt. It's tough. It's very tough. I think it's very tough on your spouse because it's. She's got to adapt because it's the way life is, you know.
You do. You have to adapt. And I think that your stable appears to me to be on a tremendous upswing right now. It looks like you have the right amount of horses. Let's talk about one of the most solid horses you've ever trained. And it might not be your favorite, but Gio Ponti, that boy showed up every time you walked him over there that I can remember. And he was just a gem of consistency. What was he like?
He was a fun horse. So he came as a two-year-old and sold. They wanted to sell him. He had a splint, so they couldn't sell him. Thank God he had that splint, otherwise he would have been with somebody else. And they sent him to me. He belonged to Dr. Ryan at the time, who owned Castleton Lion. And unfortunately, Dr. Ryan passed away when Gio Ponti, from 2 to 3, when Gio Ponti was a two-year-old turning at 3. And his son, Shane Ryan, took up the ownership. And it was a lot of fun because Gio Ponti was top class and Shane enjoyed him. Every time he raced in a big race, Shane will come with some friends. So it was more than just a horse race. He was enjoying that the weekend. He was trying to make an event out of any major race. The horse always seemed to show up. He was top class. He got beat, but even when he got beat, he actually ran nice races. You know, he never even finished at the back. Never won the Breeders' Cup, which was annoying. He finished second to Zenyatta in a classic in California. He won a great race that day. He finished second to Goldikova at Churchill. He did not do well as a two-year-old in the Breeders' Cup at Mammoth. He didn't like soft. We just had the deluge that day, and the turf was very soft, which was just bad luck. But it was a lot of fun. I think he lasted until he was 6 years old with us and then became a stallion. So basically, he competed at the grade one level from 2 to 6, which is great in a stable because you don't get that many horses that good, and if a horse can last that long, it's great.
Yeah. For me, watching him, he stayed at that level his entire career, which was amazing. I mean, until you decided to retire him, he showed up in the best races. You never backed down from the competition, and he always showed up. Like you said, even when he ran second, third, or fourth, he was coming.
Yeah, correct. And I never knew exactly what was his best distance because he ran so well at a mile, so well at a mile and a quarter. He won races, I think, going mile and 3/8, mile and a half. It just shows that, I guess, good horses just adapt.
Yeah, very interesting. Christoph, I cannot thank you enough for this interview. It was great. Hopefully we all learned a lot about the other side of Christoph Coman today. And Gary Contessa for Capital OTB.
Next up will be Longshot Vanzi. Gaffo, once again, the heavy favorite of 1-2. Vanzi moves in. We're about set. And they're off in the Kent Stakes. All coming to a good start. Sensation's going to be sent to the front by Bravo. Bye-bye, Melvin Tour. The inside moves up quickly as they race down the chute there. Sensation leads it by maybe 2 lengths. Vanzi up on the outside. Bye-bye, Melvin. Secures a good spot toward the inside, racing in third, followed by Talking under a nice hold. Pixley right alongside. Your trailers are the favorite, Gaffo, and me and Mr. C, as they pass the finish line the first time. Opening quarter, 24 seconds flat. Sensation is showing the way by a length and a quarter. Vanzi up on the outside racing second. Bye-bye, Melvin, saving all the ground in third. Pixelate is clearly fourth right now as they make their way around the bend, followed by Talking, who settles in the fifth. A gap of 3.5 lengths to Gaffo, who's now about 9 or 10 lengths off that leader, and the trailer is me and Mr. C as they straighten away down the Delaware backstretch. Half in 47-2, they pick things up just a bit there, and it's still Sensation being nursed along by Bravo by about a length and a half. Vanzi toward the outside racing second. Bye-bye, Melvin's going nicely in third, followed by Pixelate in fourth. Length further back to Talking. Gaffo yet to get underway, still about 7 lengths off that leader, and me and Mr. C is the trailer as they make their way into the far turn with Sensation to catch. leads it by about a length and a half over Vanzi. Bye Bye Melvin, still with the rail, followed by Pixelate alongside. Gaffo now begins to edge closer with Talking toward the inside. Me and Mr. C is the trailer, about 7 lengths from front to back with a quarter to go. Sensation still to catch. Leads it by a length as they turn for home. Vanzi racing second there, bunching up. Gaffo swings to the far outside, looking for his patented run. We'll see if we get it here. It's Vanzi now taking on Sensation. Pixelate is there, and here comes Gaffo, the long strides of the son of Declaration of War, and Gaffo is eating him up and passing him by. Pixelate trying to go with him, but Gaffo is edging away. Pixelate a game second, followed by Vanzi and Talking.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. You're doing a great job. Keep that game rolling.
Seth, you do a great job too. So thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Addo with you here on Alabama Day. And a special thanks to Gary Contessa getting that interview with Christoph Mamau. I thought it was great, too, because, you know, obviously you've got the horse aspect of Christoph talking a little bit about life and family and working with his son and the meet he's having. And he's firing up here throughout the meet. And he's front and center today in the Saratoga Derby with not only Decorated Invader, but Gaffo as well. And we showed the Kent going out of that break at Delaware Park where he got the Grade 3 win there up in time. And, you know, he's a legitimate 9-2, 5-1 kind of horse in here. Decorated Invader is going to be a pretty solid favorite, but I don't think he has to win. And it's, you know, we're stretching out today, a mile and 3/16 as well. So the waters and the hurdles definitely get a lot deeper, but he's certainly the horse to beat. And special thanks to Kenny McPeak at the start, kicking it off with Swiss Skydiver and Embo Tante as well in the Alabama. But I'm happy to be joined by now our last guest here today on Saturdays at the Spa. Jonathan Kitchen joins me, and we're going to talk a little turf racing as well. But Jonathan, summer in Saratoga, how's it going for you? Thanks so much for making the time, too. I know it's a little busy these weekends.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. It's always fun, man. This place is magical, right? Yeah. And even though it's not the same vibe as it normally is, it's still pretty cool. You still feel like you're in Saratoga. The weather's always a little bit better than it is in my home state of Texas. So I'm glad to be here and glad to be watching this great racing. Lucky to be watching this great racing as well.
I think, you know, you're a guy that we see out and about at town. We saw you at Salivo the other day, and we had dinner a couple weeks ago at Nove. And so you know the downtown scene. And I do feel, you hinted at it, I do feel, you know, we can't go to the races. Well, you know, we can, but you know what I mean. Sorry, folks. for the most part, but, you know, you still can get downtown. And everybody's, you know, they're minding their P's and Q's and being careful. But, you know, I've said it every day on the Handicappers Report and on this show, you can still go into town. There's a lot of race-watching parties. I know you're here, but at night a lot, and, you know, It is still Saratoga at the end of the day. It's not the craziness on Caroline Street every night, but there is still a downtown, and things are safe, and I don't know, I feel comfortable at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little easier to get dinner nowadays than it was back then. It's not nearly the stress that it used to be, but yeah, you know, and to be honest, I've been horse players out there. I promise you, I have not watched a full race live yet, so I'm not taking advantage of the fact that I'm there. When we're on that trackside set on the Fox shows, I'll look over my shoulder sometimes.
Yeah.
Because even in real race watching, real life, I like to, at the eighth pole, live, you can see who's going to win.
Right.
And so I'll look over my shoulder every once in a while to see if I'm going to get beat or not, but I haven't really just, like, sat up in the stands and watched a race.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. There's been some summers where I, tongue-in-cheek, but I was like, oh, they run live racing here? I had no idea, you know, because you just watch on the TV. You do get a better view. You're trying to follow your horses or trip notes and things like that. It's kind of like, oh, that's right. They're right out there.
Normally, we're in the secret spot during the normal meet, and I'll go weeks without seeing a live race. Yeah. I just watch them there. We used to try to sneak to the roof once a day and try to watch at least one race just because we're at Saratoga. You should watch a live one. But, man, I watched American Pharoah's Travers on TV and by the Shake Shack. You know, it's
a day at the races.
Nothing too different from
You know, you mentioned the Fox telecast. You've got a lot going on here, the podcast as well. Just talk a little bit about, let everybody know what's going on for you here in Saratoga and where they can kind of find what you're doing. The podcast, Pete's been on, Pete Fornatale, my good friend, your good friend. He was on with me earlier than me, and I think what you guys have been doing has been kind of just taking off, right?
Yeah, it's been cool, man. You know, obviously we started kind of the podcast from an individual standpoint. We had just our players podcast. We were with GRF at first, and then we kind of went off on our own, and it's kind of turned into like a network now. We've got like four or five different shows. Obviously the Matt Bernier show, Talk Racing to Me with Naomi. We got Spencer's show, Red Board Rewind, which is a really cool show for new players. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a look back. It's of what happened to kind of give you. It's kind of like a podcast version of a handicapping book.
Right.
And then obviously Pete's show and my show, and it's been good, man. It's been fun, and then my show too, the JK Plus One's been really fun with the kind of long form podcast. I had Bob Baffert last week, and that was pretty cool. I had him for an hour and a half, and his AirPods died, and I said Bob, I'm sure you're busy, like. It's all good. Thanks so much for the time. He's like, no, let's keep going. We went for another hour. So 2.5 hours with a legend like that is pretty cool. So
yeah, I mean, I had him for 20 minutes, and thanks for trumping me, by the way. But I thought he was great, and I texted him, and listen, I don't have a relationship with Bob. I texted him. I said, hey, Bob, it's Brian in Saratoga. Any chance you can do the show with me tomorrow? And the text, I could see he read the text. And 5 seconds later, he said, yeah, sure, no problem. I mean, I thought that was pretty cool that used 2.5 hours. I mean, a guy like that, listen, he's Bob Baffert. He's, you know, he's got a pretty busy day, I would think. So.
Yeah, it's cool. Bob, actually, before I even was on Fox, like, I had met Bob. We were at a Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And like, the NTRA, I had won the tour that year, and he was having American Pharoah. And we just kind of, like, met for a picture.
Yeah.
And it was just really quick. And then I saw him a year later in Miami at this crowd. I can't remember, Joe's. Is that the famous one? Joe's Stone Crowd? And he was with this kid that I used to coach. I coach high school football.
Okay.
His daughter or his niece dates this kid.
Okay.
And so we kind of met that way, and you know, we've been friendly ever since. So yeah, really nice guy. Not the superstar you would think. He's super kind.
And you know, you earn a lot more respect for when they give you the time like that. So I thought that was super cool. Today, you mentioned one of the podcasts is for beginners. You're not a beginner, and I wanted to have you on because, especially on Saratoga Derby Day, I know you're big into turf racing and things like that. And we've got mile and 3/16 in the Saratoga Derby. We've got a couple videos to show as well. That night we had dinner. I thought it was fascinating to kind of hear you talk a little bit when we were kind of just you know, talking handicapping and things like that. You know, you mentioned in turf racing especially. And especially nowadays with everybody's kind of grabbing, they have really turned into, you know, I was going to say a 3-furlong sprint. You could even make a case it's a 2 or a furlong sprint. Talk a little bit about what you're watching for in turf racing. Let's bring up Colonel Liam in his race last time, his turf debut at Saratoga right here. He's a major player for Todd today in the Derby, his turf debut. What are you kind of looking for when you're watching turf racing, the come-home times, things like that? Colonel Liam is going to kind of get up here late, the three horse with the white bridle. What are you looking for in turf races like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like you mentioned, it's I think with social media and with just the expanded coverage of racing, I feel like these riders are human, and they hear about their mistakes more than I think they used to. And so I think that they always err on the side of not going too fast. If you go out there and you go 22 and change in a mile and a half turf race, everyone's going to see it and everyone's going to crush you for it. If you get stuck behind a slow pace and you come home late, no one's really that mad at you. It's not as pronounced. And so what I've kind of learned to do, and this is kind of an idea that I kind of stole and took from Paul Matisse.
Yeah, you talked very highly about him.
Paul is a legend, obviously a Capital Region gentleman himself. And so it's that kind of that quicken, that turn of foot of how quickly a horse can come home. Because it doesn't matter how slow they go on the front end, they're not coming home faster than 33 seconds, right. You know, 32 seconds or whatever. I don't care who they are. They're just not coming home that fast. And so you have to understand who has that turn of foot to take advantage of that slow pace. So being in being involved in the race at some point, you know, late, or you know, at some point in the race late, to be able to kind of turn their feet and get going. And sometimes I think we've assumed that if you're on the front end in a turf race going 50, that's the best place to be.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that turn of foot, then it doesn't do anything for you. And so I've just tried to find a way to identify that. You can do it with pace figures, you know, Timeform US. If you kind of look at the running lines, mm-hmm. you can see where there's a big jump up from, you know, say at the fourth call, they were like going a 90 or whatever.
Right.
And then they jump up to a 122. That spread there is kind of helps you identify mm-hmm. a horse that has that turn of foot. And, you know, and you can kind of see it visually too. And that's kind of why I like Colonel Liam in here. I thought his turn of foot was impressive last time. Obviously a well-bred horse that loved getting to the grass. And,
yeah.
You know, Decorated Invader is good. And I thought Tis the Law was good too. He ended up being great.
Yeah.
Decorated Invader might do that to me today. He might end up being great, but I just think at this point he's just a really, really good horse.
Yeah, we showed the entire Hall of Fame, and Anthony Marmino, my colleague on the Handicapper's Report, thought it was a big race. Listen, he won, and he won going away. I kind of thought it was almost a little mirage-like, and that maybe Get Smokin' was stopping a little bit more than Decorated Invader was reaching out for the extra ground. I think the added distance today could much like the Alabama, could be a real leveler here. And at an underlaid price, I was with you with Colonel Liam, and I want to, you know, listen, he's 5-7, he probably wins the Breeders' Cup with a trip, but I want to see him prove it to me today at this trip.
Yeah, look, he's borderline undefeated, right? Yeah. I mean, that was that ride and or that trip, I'll say. I don't want to throw it on IRAD, but that trip in the Breeders' Cup was, man, that was tough. And so, you know, he's a good horse, but like you said, I mean, it's, if we're just picking races, I'd pick the horse.
Right.
But we're not. We're betting. It's a parimutuel game, and Decorated Invader is going to be a huge favorite because of his record and because of his notoriety. I'm going to try to beat him. I mean, and you know, in the multi-race bets, I'll probably try to involve him. But from a win standpoint, there's going to be some value on Colonel Liam.
Yeah, let's look at Field Pass too. We're going to bring up his Transylvania for Mike Maker, who's having a big meet, Three Diamonds Farm. He's going to be coming out on the outside in mid-stretch. I thought, you know, he's versatile. He's come home pretty quickly as well. This was over a good turf course, so I give him a little added boost there. You see him here kind of in the turquoise there with the blinkers on. He's interesting to me at a price for a guy that's a great long-distance turf trainer. Maybe coming into the race the right way and being a little overlooked as well.
The further they go, the better they run typically for Mike Maker. And the thing about Field Pass, I think, that's interesting is that if you look at his record, he's won 4 out of his last 5, and the only race he lost was to Smooth Like Straight, who won a stake out in California, the La Jolla, I believe, for Michael McCarthy. So, you know, he's a little bit light on numbers to a certain extent compared to some of these, but Mike Maker's been having a great meet. Tyler's been riding well for the meet. You know, he's not a horse that I would want to toss by any means, but I think he's going to need to find a little bit more if he wants to beat Decorated Invader, Gouffo, Colonel Liam, and even Domestic Spending.
Well, let's talk about him quickly, Domestic Spending. I didn't think he was much. I didn't think his maiden win at Tampa was much. Frankly, I didn't think his allowance win at Belmont was much. But I kind of think he answered the bell a little bit in the Hall of Fame. It's Chad. It's Seth Klarman. It's a Kingman going a mile and 3/16. Upside, lightly raced. And you know these Chads going farther, they're gonna be there. I don't know if you get the value on him. You mentioned, you know, this is a betting game, and that's why we said if we had to pick a horse to win, it's probably Decorated Invader, but we're in this for the value. Domestic Spending, any interest in him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's Chad, it's a turf race, of course. I think the interesting thing about Domestic Spending is if you look at XBTV, where you can watch these horses work in the morning, his last two works have been with Digital Age, mm-hmm. which is a stakes
very
type,
nice
and then
horse.
Also Rushing Fall, who might be one of the greatest turf mares we've ever seen.
Might be a Hall of Fame horse,
right? Absolutely. So it's, I think there's some signs there that maybe just Domestic Spending coming into his own. I thought he ran well last time. He was far back. He came circling extremely wide. You know, again, they're going to all need to improve a little bit to beat Decorated Invader, but they're 3-year-olds, and that's what happens. They improve. So I wouldn't be shocked if he got the job done.
Yeah,
tough race,
exactly. And I think kind of what Jonathan's hinting at is, sure, Decorate Invader's the horse to beat. There's no doubt about it. But if he comes back a little bit, if some of these horses improve, then all of a sudden the 7-8-5 and the 4-1, the gap is a lot shorter than the prices on the tote board are going to indicate.
No, for sure. They're going to make Decorated Invader the favorite, but then, you know, domestic spending is going to take some money because it's Chad, and Colonel Liam had the triple-digit buyer last time, yeah. So people are going to go there, and then people are going to get cute with the alternative with Gufo, and Field Pass is going to take some money, and then people are going to think Get Smoking could wire him. I mean,
he's as loose as he wants to be.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting race how they bet it, and, you know, I'm going to try to get away with using the top three. I'm going to try to get away with Decorated Invader, Domestic Spinning, and Colonel Liam. But I'll have some savers on Field Pass for sure.
Quickly, before we let you go, Alabama, obviously you've looked at it. You said you're going to be on for Fox. Opinions, I think there's no doubt Swiss Skydivers is going to take some beating. But again, mile and a quarter, she doesn't have to win.
No, I mean, I love Spice's Nice.
Okay.
From the start, they've been talking about how much ground she needs, and she'll love more ground. Todd Pletcher has a great record in the Belmont, which to me, this is kind of the Philly version of the Belmont. It's the longest they're going to go. It's that marathon dirt thing, and I just feel like Spice is Nice is going to hit her right between the eyes. She's going to just gallop them around there, and I'm not convinced that Swiss Skydiver wants to go that far.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I thought Envotante was interesting as well. Again, the separator, the mile and a quarter. Indy, Alabama, so it should be an interesting race. It's another one of those races where you don't have to bet the favorite. JK, I appreciate you making the time, getting through security and fighting through, getting the ever famous wristband to get over here this morning, as they've taken, rightfully so, a lot of precautions here at Saratoga. Best of luck today throughout the meet. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, Jonathan Kitchen, like I said, Fox, you can catch him later on as well throughout the meet, but it's going to bring us to the end of Saturdays at the Spa. Again, Kenny McPeak front and center, Gary Contessa with a great interview, Christoph Clement, and Jonathan Kitchen wrapping it up. So thanks so much. Alabama Day here at Saratoga. Enjoy. I will catch you Thursday. Seth and Sully front and center tomorrow morning. Good luck.
You've been watching Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Nadeau. Saturdays at the Spa has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.